They'd begun to come upon dead windfalls of pine trees, great swaths of ruin cut through the countryside, the wreckage of buildings strewn over the landscape, and skeins of wire from the roadside poles garbled like knitting. The road was littered with debris, and it was work to get the cart through. Finally, they just sat by the side of the road and stared at what was before them. Roofs of houses, the trunks of trees, a boat, the open sky beyond where in the distance the sullen sea lagged and shifted. They sorted through the wreckage strewn along the road, and in the end he came up with a canvas bag that he could tote over his shoulder and a small suitcase for the boy. They packed their blankets and the tarp and what was left of the canned goods and set out again with their knapsacks and their bags, leaving the cart behind. Clambering through the ruins, slow going, he had to stop and rest. He sat in a roadside sofa, the cushions bloated in the damp, bent over, coughing. He pulled the blood-stained mask from his face and got up and rinsed it in the ditch and wrung it out and then just stood there in the road, his breath pluming white. Winter was already upon them. He turned and looked at the boy, standing with his suitcase like an orphan waiting for a bus. In 2 days' time, they came to a broad tidal river where the bridge lay collapsed in the slow-moving water. They sat on the broken abutment of the road and watched the river backing upon itself and coiling over the iron trellis work. He looked across the water to the country beyond.
"What are we gonna do, Papa?" he said.
"Well, what are we?" said the boy.
They walked out the long spit of tidal mud, where a small boat lay half buried, and stood there looking at it. It was altogether derelict. There was rain in the wind. They trudged up the beach with their baggage, looking for shelter, but they found none. He scuffled together a pile of the bone-colored wood that lay along the shore and got a fire going, and they sat in the dunes with the tarp over them and watched the cold rain coming in from the north. It fell harder, dimpling the sand. The fire steamed and the smoke swung in slow coils, and the boy curled up under the pattering tarp, and soon he was asleep. The man pulled the tarp over himself in a hood and watched the gray sea shrouded away out there in the rain, and watched the surf break and fan out along the shore and draw away again over the dark and stippled sand. The next day they headed inland again, a vast low swale where ferns and hydrangeas and wild orchids lived on in ashen effigies, which the wind hadn't yet reached. Their progress was a torture. In 2 days, when they came out upon a road, he set the bag down and sat bent over with his arms crossed at his chest and coughed till he could cough no more. 2 more days, and they may have traveled 10 miles. They crossed the river, and a short ways on, they came to a crossroads. Down country, a storm had passed over the isthmus and leveled the dead black trees from east to west, like weeds in the floor of a stream. Here they camped, and when he lay down, he knew that he could go no further, and that this was the place where he would die. The boy sat watching him, his eyes welling.
"Oh, Papa," he said.
He watched him come through the grass and kneel with the cup of water he'd fetched. There was light all about him. He took the cup and drank and lay back. They had for food a single tin of peaches, but he made the boy eat it, and he wouldn't take any.
"I can't," he said. "It's all right."
"I'll save your half."
"Okay. You save it until tomorrow."
He took the cup and moved away, and when he moved, the light moved with him. He'd wanted to try and make a tent out of the tarp, but the man wouldn't let him. He said that he didn't want anything covering him. He lay watching the boy at the fire. He wanted to be able to see.
Look around you, he said. There is no prophet in the earth's long chronicle who's not honored here today. Whatever form you spoke of, you were right.